Hello and welcome to Birth as We Know It. I am your podcast host, Kiona Nessenbaum. I have experienced birth as a doula, a student midwife, and as a mother of three amazing children with my husband and high school sweetheart by my side. After attending over 130 births, including my own, I've realized that each birth experience is truly unique. So make sure you subscribe and join me every week as we are guided through many different birth experiences through the lens of the storyteller. Please be aware that some of the stories can be triggering to hear, so feel free to pause, take a breath, and come back and listen whenever you're ready. With that said, let's prep ourselves to dive deep and get detailed about what really happens in the birth space. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and has no intention of giving or replacing any medical advice. All advice that is given on the podcast is from the personal experiences of the storytellers. All medical or health-related questions should be directed to your licensed provider. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Birth as We Know It podcast. I am so excited today to be talking to someone that I was connected with in the past. Their name is Erin, and Erin will be sharing her birth story with us today. So welcome, Erin.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast.
You're welcome. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm super excited to hear your story. And I was present at your birth, but I would love to, it's been a while, you know, 3.5 years now. And so yeah. I'd love to go through it again. But first thing we'll talk about is just tell us a little bit about yourself and who's in your family.
Yeah, so let's see. So I live in Seattle with my husband and my daughter, Ciel. And she's 3.5. And so it's just us and our nuclear family. And then we have, you know, other family sometimes that live nearby, but right now live pretty far away. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's just us.
Nice. Yeah. Awesome. So today you're going to be sharing your own personal birth story with us. And I would love to start out with pregnancy, just because I feel like it's really hard to get into the birth without talking about pregnancy.
Yeah.
So how was finding out you were pregnant? Were you and your partner trying? Were you and Sam trying? Was it quick? Was it slow? How was your pregnancy throughout?
Yeah. So we were trying for a really long time. Started around when I was 33, and we tried for about 3 years straight with absolutely no success, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So no positive pregnancy tests, no nothing, mm-hmm. not even chemical positive or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing all sorts of natural therapies and acupuncture and my abdominal massage, of course, like watching my diet and nutrition, everything like that, getting tested. And it seemed like everything from the test point of view was checking out fine. So at that point it was unexplained infertility, and same with Sam, he was doing everything and getting tested and everything was fine on his account. But because I was like getting to be, you know, 36 plus years old, I felt like, okay, I don't know how much longer I can wait. Mm-hmm. So we started to explore assisted reproduction. Mm-hmm. And we looked into IVF and IUI. And then because the clinic I was at happened to be offering this free trial for certain people who qualified, we said, yeah, sign us up for that. Mm-hmm. And we did IVF for free, luckily, and then
that's beautiful.
got pregnant on the first transfer. Nice. So that was like amazing at that time, but was like, you know, at the end of the culmination of a long journey. Mm-hmm. And so like when I found out I was pregnant, it was like the most amazing day ever.
Yeah.
And they told me not to like test on my own with the strips at home because they didn't want you to get your hopes up or something. They wanted you to come in for a blood test. But of course I did test on my own at home, and like I could like see by, you know, whatever day probably like day 12 or something that I was pregnant. Mm-hmm. And then,
and you mean day 12 post ovulation or
post, no, I think, oh yeah. What post transfer.
Post transfer.
Yeah. Something like that. I might be wrong.
Yeah, that's okay.
I don't remember now. Yeah. And then of course I went in for the blood test and it was positive and I was like, yes. So yeah, it was amazing.
That's
when
awesome.
We found out.
Yeah. That's super awesome. Such a journey to get there to the start of the new journey.
Yeah. And it was something like, you know, I was like resisting using IVF for the longest time. I don't want to have to do that. Mm-hmm. Felt like it wasn't part of my journey. Mm-hmm. But I just at some point was like, you know what, like, I want to try whatever I can do to try to get pregnant. And mm-hmm. so I did, and it worked out. And so that's all that mattered.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. That's beautiful.
And then my pregnancy was very easy, luckily. I didn't get morning sickness. I felt pretty good most of the time. I probably felt tired near the end. Mm-hmm. My lower back didn't even hurt at the end. It was overall like quite a good pregnancy. So I was very grateful and thankful for that.
Good, good. So throughout your pregnancy, mm-hmm. you didn't have like any health concerns that came up, like gestational diabetes or, you know, any specific cravings come to mind?
Right. Yeah, I didn't really have cravings. I think the only thing that came up was like my blood pressure at one time dropped like so low that they were like, you have the blood pressure of a child right now.
Ooh.
And I was like, okay. But I felt like basically okay. So we just like addressed that and monitored it. And then that was fine. But mm-hmm. everything else, yeah, nothing else came up that was of concern.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's really good. So when you were nearing the end of your pregnancy, did you have any symptoms or things that made you second guess whether or not you were starting labor, or did you know right away?
No, I think I knew right away, but I think that what I didn't know was that it would take as long as it did, mm-hmm. that the labor would take as long as it did. Because my daughter was about 5 days, came 5 days after her due date. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing acupuncture to kind of stimulate labor. And then the midwives did the, what's it called? Where they like touch the membrane or they swipe the membrane.
Yeah,
or
like a membrane sweep or cervical sweep.
Yeah, membrane sweep. So they did that like twice. And on the second time, I think, I did it like say December 20th and then like December 20th, I also had acupuncture, and on the table, I was starting to feel some sort of contractions on the table, mm-hmm. But very light. And then I went to eat dinner out at a restaurant with my husband and my mom and was feeling them all throughout dinner. And that was also obviously very light because I was having dinner and it was fine. And then we went home and we watched a movie. I tried to go to sleep, probably slept for a little bit, but they were ongoing, just like getting stronger, but nothing like quite painful, just uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And this kept going until about maybe like 2 or 3 a.m. And then they started getting really painful and, had to like really breathe through them. Mm-hmm. And I think then we contacted you because you were going to be my doula, mm-hmm. by about maybe 6 a.m. And you said for us to tell you when there are certain minutes apart. Mm-hmm. And so we did. And I think you came over at like 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. And then so by that point, I mean, I think that whole evening I like knew I was in labor. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know how long it would take.
Yeah.
My water hadn't broken or anything at that point. And then basically like you came over and helped me breathe through them for another few hours, maybe like 2 or 3 more hours. Mm-hmm. And I think we got to the hospital by about 11 or something like that a.m.
Yeah. And I do remember showing up and could tell that you guys had little sleep. And then, you know, you coped so well through your contractions. And as a doula, it was me coming in and just trying to meet you where you were, right? Meet you where you were at. And then when we had conversed more about what you were wanting and doing, then we did decide to go into the hospital. And from there, I feel like things just continued to progress. There was no like turning you back home or anything.
Yeah, they did not turn me back because luckily they examined me, you know, right away. And they said it was like 6 to 7 centimeters or something. And so they're like, okay, good. You're like, you don't have to leave.
Yeah.
And I remember being really proud of myself that I had gotten that far at home.
Yeah.
But when I got to the hospital, which was always the plan to have a hospital birth, they were very full. They didn't have any birthing rooms. And they were like, oh, well, you could probably give birth in this like kind of triage room here, which was about like, you know, 8 by 8 room.
Right.
And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. And, you know, luckily within 10 more minutes, they had a room available.
Yeah.
But I was so happy I brought my own yoga ball because they were out of rooms and they were out of balls and all this stuff. And my, you know, the lesson from that is even if they tell you during the tour, they'll have plenty of everything. It's not necessarily true.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do remember that when you went into a room, it was actually one of the nicer rooms that they had and it was a little bit bigger.
Yeah. It was a pretty big room.
Yeah.
And of course, I really wanted the jet tub, which is why I had wanted that hospital and all that, you know, didn't want to be in the triage room because I wouldn't have had a jet tub. So I think I started using the tub within like 30 minutes or so of getting there.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the biggest moments that I remember from your labor is something super simple, is the fact that you ate. You know, like you were actually eating throughout your labor and coping really well. And in my mind as a doula, I was like, okay, just be prepared with like an emesis bag, it just in case, you know, because I did have clients that would eat and then they would be like, oh no, that's not sitting well. But you were like eating and working through it. And it was great. I just remember emailing you asking if you would share your story because the fact that you ate like a whole hard boiled egg, you know, like, I don't know why, like that just stuck out to me so much. And it's the little details throughout your labor that really can make it individualized. And, I also really liked your midwife. Your midwife was really nice at the time as well. So how was, the progression of your labor from your perspective? Like once you were in and settled, like, how do you think it went from there?
Yeah. So I got in the tub and I think like, you had brought some battery candles, which was really nice to set the mood in there. And I think like once I was in there, like it felt like the contractions got stronger and faster. And I think it sped it up. Once I was in the tub, there was a certain level of relaxation. Sped it up. I remember like getting out of the tub after maybe 20 minutes or something. And it was so, I got the strongest contraction yet where like, I just like, I couldn't walk. And I was like gasping for air. And like, I had to like hold on to Sam. And it was the most intense. It like literally took my breath away. So we got to the bed after that. And then like, doing kind of different positions on the bed. I faced the bed, you know, it was folded. So it was kind of like it had a backrest part of it. So I like put my arms on the backrest part of it, facing it so that I could kind of labor on my knees. And that felt good for a while. And I think the, midwife said, do you want direction on how to breathe through it? And I'm like, sure, like whatever you want to tell me, like just tell me. So she did, and I can't remember. at what point my water broke, but I think it was pretty soon after that. And at this point, like, I mean, the contractions were very painful and very strong. And I was planning on doing it unmedicated. Mm-hmm. And I think during this time I was like, you know, questioning that. Mm-hmm. But I also like kind of either knew that it was maybe at the point of no return, that there was really not an option for medication at that point.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, okay, we're just going to do this.
Yeah.
And so I think it just, you know, there is a whole part of it that's a blur.
Yeah.
But I do remember, like, at one point they're like, okay, we actually want you to be on your side. Mm. And pushing on your side. And there was, I can't remember why, other than, well, this was why, I think. So they're monitoring the baby's heart, of course, the whole time. Mm-hmm. With the things that are stuck to my belly. And they're like, okay, like, she's a little stressed about coming out, or like, she's, whatever is happening right now, her body, her heart is a little bit stressed, so like, we really need to get her out quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think at that point a bunch of other nurses and doctors came into the room. Mm. Like, I'm not sure how many, but it was like, Sam said it was maybe like, there was like maybe, I don't know, 6 to 8 people in the room. Mm-hmm. That were not between you, me, and Sam. Right. So it was like all these other doctors and nurses came in. My eyes were like closed, so like, I didn't really know. Mm-hmm. Who they were, what they looked like, anything. I just heard voices. And it was obviously extremely painful at this point. I was like, you know, pretty much ready to be done. The doctor said, hey, we need to get her out as soon as possible. So I do need to make an incision and do like an episiotomy. And I'm like, you know, okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, at that point. And they're like, okay, and we need you to do like one big push. And so like, I mustered all my strength and took a deep breath, and then I like did this really big push. And I think that's when she came out. Mm. Is like right then. And so I think like the pushing, when they, you know how they tell you to not push for so long. Mm-hmm. And they say like, don't necessarily push, even though you want to push. Mm-hmm. I think the pushing for me was only about like 5 minutes or so, 5 to 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. The contractions were, of course, much longer, but the pushing was very short. And yeah, and she came out, and I guess like you feel this release. It's just so hard to remember at this point. But I didn't necessarily feel like pain when she came out, but I think it's like that relief. And at that point, Sam was basically almost beside himself with just emotion. So he like, it was like almost too much for him. He almost like fainted.
Yeah.
He had to like sit down. And they pulled her out, and she was like crying at the top of her lungs, like so full of life, and like such like a full bodied cry. Mm. And they put her on my chest, like right away, with the umbilical cord still attached. Mm-hmm. And I held her and like tried to like comfort her. And then, you know, after a few minutes, I think they like washed her off and weighed her and everything. And I can't remember at which point, but at some point, they asked Sam to, you know, say which sex she was. And, you know, he was like, oh, this is a girl. And I I was like, oh my God. Cause it was a mystery for us until then. We didn't find out earlier on.
Yeah.
And she like weighed like, I think 7.5 pounds and, was like 19 inches long. So like, you know, right in the average size range. And like, I just like had her back on my chest and like, it's so bright in there. Like, I hate how bright it is in those hospital rooms.
Yeah.
But, like, they have to do that for, like, you know, to see stuff, I guess. But I, like, tried to, like, shield her eyes because, of course, she's coming from this dark, dark space. And then it's, like, blinding lights. So I tried to shield her eyes and she was, you know, still crying. But after a while, calmed down. And they had to, you know, sew me up. Pretty soon after, well, I think the placenta came out before they sewed me up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that exactly, like if I had to push it out or if it just kind of comes out.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I think you pushed it out a little bit because most of the time,
yeah.
Most of the time there is a little bit effort that needs to be put forth on the birthing parent's part to like expel the placenta and push the placenta out.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people refer to it as birthing the placenta instead of a
right.
baby's birthing
yeah.
the placenta.
Yeah.
But it's totally understandable as well to like not really even remember that because you have a baby on your chest.
A baby right there. Yeah. And I know we waited for the cord to stop pumping blood and everything mm-hmm. before they cut it. Mm-hmm. And then the placenta came out and we saved the placenta.
Mm-hmm.
And then like what happened next? Oh, and then they were like, okay, we have to like, you know, sew you up. And so I assume they like do some numbing or something down there. I'm not sure, mm-hmm. but I was of course so focused on her that I didn't even care what was going on.
Yeah.
And Sam was right there. Like, you know, we're both fawning over her, but I do remember like, I think it just for whatever reason, the way she was like facing, I didn't see her face for the longest time because she was like facing the other way and was like, take a photo of her. I don't even know what she looks like. And so like Sam took a photo of her and showed me.
Yeah. Cause she was just so settled in.
Yeah. She was so like settled in like this one direction. And then, I guess like at some point, do they kind of encourage you to have her breastfeed
mm-hmm.
like they kind of I forget how long after you give birth that they do this, but like, you know, and she like kind of like tried to a little bit. I don't really think she got much out
mm-hmm.
but it was like she was definitely trying and then that was that. She like fell asleep.
Yeah. I do remember afterwards, usually, you know, after the baby's born, they sit on your chest for a while until like the suturing is completed.
Yeah.
And that way you can like readjust and be better. And of course, if baby finds their way to the nipple, like throughout that time, mm-hmm. then they're welcome to breastfeed.
Yeah.
But they don't usually like help guide or teach how the breastfeeding happens until like you're up settled
yeah.
and adjusted and
yeah
I'm pretty sure that happened probably around like an hour after birth, like you guys were more
okay,
focused
yeah.
on feeding at that point,
right?
Yeah
I remember like I mentioned about the yoga ball, like mm-hmm. that was like my go-to for comfort for most of the labor, especially at home.
Mm-hmm.
I was on that thing almost the whole time. It was, I think before you got to see me, I was,
mm-hmm.
and it really helped. And then at the hospital, it helped again. So I really recommend that. I'm not sure why it helped so much, but it was just like the only comfortable position to be in for a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I think like with the contractions and that feeling of something's like coming out of you and it feels like, you know, your entire insides are like gonna come out of you
mm-hmm.
and you're like, I think your instinct is to somewhat hold that in.
Mm-hmm.
because that feels so scary for like to let go of everything that's inside of you. Mm-hmm. So I remember that feeling a lot is like, whoa, like what is happening? You know, it feels like very much almost like a bowel movement because it's, I don't know if it was just her like pressing on that part of me, mm-hmm. but I think for a lot of women, it like really kind of feels like a different kind of pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. A very heavy, yeah. deep kind of pressure. And it is very much yeah. like, you know, someone had just explained it recently as like a bowel movement that you have to hold in, you know,
yeah.
which is like, mm-hmm. you really yeah. have to go, but you have to hold it in, but you know, you have to go.
Yeah.
You know, like that whole like balance of yeah. trying to figure out like what to do with your body. And then yeah. also there's that like, you know, primal instinct of doing that, of holding in your body, mm-hmm. very animalistic. But then there's the, you also having to listen to what your providers or team are saying and be like, no, not yet. Mm-hmm. Or yeah, go ahead. Or hey, your body's not ready yet. Mm-hmm. You know? And so trying to find that balance yeah. between the two kind of worlds, like the, your internal yeah. you know, feelings and then what's happening around you. So.
Yeah. And I think in total, the labor, I mean, I guess I just don't know like when I can start counting it from mm-hmm. like, you know, from like the very subtle contractions or do you start from the more like active labor? Mm. But my first contractions at all was like 19 hours before mm-hmm. she came out. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Probably the active labor part was more like 5 hours or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause from the time that I met you at your home and then we went to the hospital, it seemed to progress quite quickly at the hospital. And I think I was mm-hmm. only with you guys total. It was definitely under 10 hours, like
yeah,
maybe like 5 or 6, you know, cause like,
yeah,
I was able to go home, I think at like mm-hmm. midday, you know?
Yeah, well, but she came out at 5 p.m. So I think
okay, you so probably... it was like dinner time then.
Dinner time, yeah.
I was like, I remember eating food when I got home. But yeah. So yeah, it was such just like the moments that I do remember, because it has been so long, so of course it's hard to remember the little details of how things
yeah.
happened and then with multiple clients and things.
Yeah.
But I do remember you bringing your birth ball and being really happy about that. And then I remember Sam bringing up the coolers and you guys having like a lunch like slash like snack during the labor. And the food stuck yeah. out to me so much. But I'm interested in hearing how your feeding experience went with CL. Like, how was that for you? Mm-hmm. Did you have any challenges? Did you continue breastfeeding?
Yeah. So, So once we were in our hospital room where we were going to stay overnight, they, you know, did teach me how to breastfeed. And I think she was basically latching on. Okay. And it felt really weird and kind of, you know, painful mm-hmm. and weird at first, probably for the first month at least. And, but she was jaundiced, so they had to, like, get her to, like, eat as much as possible and, like, really push as many fluids through her as possible. Mm-hmm. So they had us, when we went home, supplement with formula for the first maybe week mm-hmm. so that she'd have breast milk and formula and just, like, get as much through her as possible. Mm-hmm. And then that it helped clear out her jaundice just fine. So she actually learned how to drink from a bottle, like right away too. Mm-hmm. But then like overall, like breastfeeding was fine. I think I went to a lactation specialist a couple times at the very beginning to get her to like latch even deeper mm-hmm. and, better. And she had like a small tongue tie, but it was the type that was like, not, I guess, worth necessarily doing it. A little surgery on mm-hmm. because it wasn't like fully preventing her from getting milk. Mm-hmm. So we just didn't do that. And yeah. And so like, I think it probably took to like the third month or so, even the fourth month for her to like be really, for us to feel both really solid with breastfeeding.
Yeah.
And you know, definitely like didn't always feel good, painful at times. But, you know, as she got older, by the time she was like maybe, you know, 10 months and above, she had a way of communicating to me like that she was done with one breast and was ready to go to the other breast, you know.
That's awesome.
She'd like shake her, she'd like do a little kick with her legs, and I'd be like, okay,
switch. That's awesome.
So cute. Yeah.
Yeah. And so how long was your breastfeeding relationship with Ciel?
I think it was 15 months.
Nice.
Yeah, about that time. And I was, you know, it was like a hard decision. Like, do we stop? She seems to enjoy it, but also like, it wasn't, she didn't seem to like really rely on it either.
Mm-hmm.
And so we cut down to, I think, just a night feeding, or like just before bedtime feeding, one time a day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, I think for the mom, it's always like a comfort thing too. It's an emotional bond with your child, and it's very comforting for both of you.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I think the other thing was that like pumping was getting to be such a burden too, because if you're only feeding once a day, like sometimes you still need a pump, you know, to like relieve your breasts. So that was just getting to be so annoying that I just felt like, we just gotta stop. And I think I tried to stop once, but then I kind of got like a blockage and I felt like, oh shoot, like I'm not ready. I wanna just like keep it flowing through. And so like I restarted and then tried it again, and I just had to like kind of, I'm not even sure how this works now because it's been so long, but like, you know, you do have to kind of end slowly so that your breasts can still like, so that they don't get blocked up and get infected.
Yeah. So they kind of have the message of like, hey, yeah, your body doesn't need as much. And it's like a slow,
as much, yeah,
slow decrease in supply. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. And then I think by the time that she was fully weaned, like, she was fine with it. She didn't seem to like, you know, ask for it in a baby's way or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was like, she's always was a really hungry baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so always like loved eating food in general.
Mm-hmm.
And when she switched to solids, like she was, you know, would eat so much that we would like feel her belly as the gauge.
Yeah.
Because she would just eat like nonstop. And so we'd have to like fill her belly. And she got to the point where her belly was so taut that we're like, we can't let her keep eating like oatmeal or whatever.
Yeah.
Like she's so full.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd kind of like have to like take it away, because I think she would stuff herself.
Yeah. Like overeat. Oh, that's
yeah,
great. Cause not, I guess there's pros and cons to that, you know, like feeding until
yeah,
like you're super full and like trying to gauge
yeah,
that as a parent. But at the same time, you know, I personally deal with my babies not eating enough. Like sometimes they'll be like,
mm-hmm,
yeah, like days like yes, 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 yes. And then I'm like, okay, you gotta eat. And they're like, no, no.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they don't want
yeah,
to, or like turn away, or
yeah,
all this stuff. And I'm just like, man, it would be nice to have an eater, like without
yeah,
without complaining or bribery or
yeah,
anything else.
Making deals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. And so moving back a little bit further back to your immediate postpartum time, did you and Sam have a lot of support at home? Because I know you were
mm-hmm,
saying that your family was close and then they live far now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my mom normally lives in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really far.
Yeah.
And she was planning on coming out for a good 6 weeks to be with us at the beginning. So she had planned that. It was there probably a week before the birth,
mm-hmm,
and then stayed for about 6 weeks. And so that was extremely helpful. She basically cooked everything for us. Maybe, I mean, I know she was like every morning she had breakfast ready for me, which was incredible, because
mm-hmm,
I'm a huge breakfast person, and like just not having to deal with that was perfect.
Yeah.
And then I think she and Sam like split the making dinners and stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was helpful. She would hold the baby while Sale napped, and while I napped. And I don't think she ever really gave her a bottle, maybe a few times gave her a bottle. Mm-hmm. But she would mostly just hold her and be around, and cleaning was like a big thing. So just like having someone else to do the cleaning and laundry, mm-hmm. so helpful. And then Sam and I would do the nighttime wake ups and feedings and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. I would pump often while he would feed her with a bottle in the middle of the night. Mm. And then, luckily, like we've always had like a really equitable, care schedule. Mm-hmm. So he would, you know, readily be available to just help with either feeding or diaper changing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then my mom left and my dad came for a little while, but you know, just more as like emotional support. He did probably like help a little bit with meals, but mostly just to visit and hold her. Mm-hmm. And same with like Sam's dad and Sam's sister. But then like after that first few months, like, yeah, we're just kind of on our own. And mm-hmm. I think that that's an unfortunate part of like the nuclearization of our modern families mm-hmm. is like, it's not like I don't want to have my extended family live with me. It's not by choice. Mm-hmm. It's just like by circumstance. Like I would gladly have them live next door to me mm-hmm. In my house if I had enough space to help and have like a multi-generational household.
Yeah.
But it's just not how it works out with like where my extended family lives. And my sister had a baby 2 months before I did. So like my niece is, you know, almost the same age as CL. And that was an amazing thing. And she lived in Seattle for about a year and a half mm-hmm. and the cousins got to be best friends. Mm. But then she moved away to Mexico City. So it's pretty far away, but yeah. We hope like maybe someday we'll be in the same city again.
That's really awesome. It sounds like you had a lot of support and it was like kind of staggered out so that it kind of lasted a while, you know, in different mm-hmm. aspects of how heavy the support was. That makes me think of the question, when did Sam return to work? Did he return soon or?
Right. So actually he did return soon because he had this teaching gig at the University of Washington mm-hmm. that started like January, you know, 5th or something. And so he basically was only able to be home for the first couple weeks after the birth mm-hmm. before he had to go back to work. And it wasn't a full-time gig, so it wasn't like he was gone all the time, but he still really had to, like, you know, focus and lesson plan and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Whereas I was off for at least 6 months. I have my own business, so, like, I could arrange that for myself. Mm-hmm. But my plan was to be on maternity leave for at least 6 months. And then, he did return pretty quickly, but then he took his paid time off, I think in the summer, so that he could, I could take off time. I could still like be, I started to work again in the summer mm-hmm. in like June, and he was able to come back and work, be with CL.
Yeah. So it sounds like you guys kind of staggered your time off as well, as much as possible.
We did.
Yeah. So that you guys could support each other in that aspect. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in retrospect, it would have been great if he had had like a whole month maybe before returning to work. Mm-hmm. But because I had my mom there, that's like what made it possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. That's really awesome. And I think it's really cool that your sister had a baby like so soon, like 2 months before you. Were you present at her birth or had you experienced a birth prior to your own birth?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I hadn't experienced a birth prior to my own giving birth. She was in San Diego when she gave birth. And I guess just because it was like a couple months ahead of my due date, I could have technically flown down there and been at her birth. But of course, you never know when the baby's coming.
Right.
So her baby came exactly on her due date. But it was so fast, like her, you know, from the time of her first contractions to when she had the baby, I think was only like 5 hours or less. So it came really fast. And then I just wasn't comfortable traveling at that point of my pregnancy. So I did not. I wanted to, but it just, if I had been less pregnant, I might have done it. I think there's the other aspect of like, you know, like you're a little, you're nervous when you're like about to give birth for the first time. And like, I think it's like a little bit of ignorance is bliss where like you would maybe want to be at a close friend or sister's birth, but like at the same time, maybe it'd be like really stressful and that might stress you out as a like pregnant person who is almost due. And I think there was aspect of that.
Too. Which is totally understandable. You know, like it would be really, really cool to have attended a, like a birth, but at the same time, just like what you said, you don't want that to skew your expectations or emotions on what your personal birth experience would be.
But interestingly, people never ask this. My husband had attended a birth before. He had attended his own sister's giving birth to her first daughter. And which is very unusual, but she had just like said that she would like him to be there and he was open to it. And so he was there at her when she gave birth to her first daughter.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's really cool. I think that that's great because it puts that into perspective, you know, which is part of the reason why I created this podcast was to get perspectives from other people and how partners see birth. And I have I have yet to have the chance to interview a partner. I'm trying to convince my husband, like, come on, let's do this, get on the podcast. But to, it would be so cool to like also interview him to see what, you know, his perception of birth was, because having that experience prior to yours and what may have potentially been different. And he was full of emotions when CL was born. There was a lot of like quick changes and things that were happening. And so to have that aspect and have it being your child rather than like your niece, there's those different, you know, feelings and emotions. Like, of course you love both babies, but it's different.
Yeah, and he was so much younger when his niece was born. He was in his early 20s. And I think just like, I tried to ask him about that experience and I just, he like really does not remember that much. So it's kind of funny because I'm sure it did leave an impression on him, but like his memory of it is really patchy.
Well, that's that could be a good thing in a way. Meaning like it wasn't a super traumatic experience from for him to view and visualize and be an observer of, which could lead to, you know, it was great. You know, like it, it was good. Baby came out, you know? Because I feel like when there are those, you know, bigger, more scary, quick changes, some births can be really traumatic. Those leave a really heavy imprint, which is why negative stories tend to spread faster than positive ones.
And I mean, there was an element of it being kind of traumatic with this, with CL's birth, in that there was just a whole like, okay, we need to, we really need to get her out. Like she's stressed. All the people, extra people came into the room at once. I luckily at that stage, and this is probably like some amazing part of just the mother child bond, is like I just felt confident that she would be okay. I felt like because during all the previous checkups with her, when they monitor her heart rate and they like actually print out that kind of graph of it, she was always really strong and like really solid. And I just kind of felt like in that moment, like, I knew she was going to be fine and she'd bounce back. Mm-hmm. And that really gave me confidence that everything was going to be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, you're always like worried at the last minute, like, are you going to have an emergency C-section or something like that? And that thought luckily didn't cross my head. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know. I felt confident that she would be fine, but I still wanted to, like, you know, make sure that she came out pretty soon.
Right. Yeah. You felt the urgency, but you had confidence that all was going to be good.
Yeah. So, and then she came out and she was fine. And her heart rate was doing really well. And she was, you know, like I said, she had a really full-bodied cry, and like one of the nurses was like, wow, she has quite a voice. Mm-hmm. And that made me feel good because I love singing. And so like, I wanted, you know, I've wanted to teach her to yeah. sing, and she already like has, just on her own, like, is so musical. And she was singing from such a young age, like yeah. In tune, just like completely like, ability to like recognize tone and melody and everything. So
that's beautiful.
Just like warms my heart so much.
That's so beautiful. I think that's awesome for her to yeah. just also like feel it in herself and not, you know, be mm-hmm. pressured or anything into yeah. like music. And but that's so good. And that just shows yeah. that she can probably feel the love that you have for music. And she's like, hey, mm-hmm. this is good. I love mm-hmm. this. And it's being able to relate on that. I think that's great.
Yeah.
Well, I only have three final questions for you. Mm-hmm. The first one would be, if you could give a piece of advice to any pregnant person out there as they prepare for pregnancy or labor and birth, so like anybody really, mm-hmm. what would that piece of advice be?
Well, I think that having support at your side during the birth is super important. Mm-hmm. Whether that's your partner, or if you don't have a partner, having a doula or a really close friend or relative. Because even if you have your midwife there or your doctor or your nurse, like, they are obviously like concerned about you and want to support you, but their focus is not necessarily on you emotionally, and I think you can really benefit from having someone there who is not necessarily just a medical provider, who is an emotional provider, emotional support person. It can be very helpful too to have a doula, as I had you, because your partner, as I experienced, can get so overwhelmed with emotion mm-hmm. that they might not be able to support you.
Yeah.
It's not like they are not there and they're not present, but they just might be like, it might be like so intense for them too, that you kind of need a third party who is a little more objective and just a little less, well, they're going to be invested in the outcome, but they're not as emotionally connected to you, so that they're not going to get so overwhelmed. And so I do always recommend that to friends I know who are going to give birth, and who maybe think, oh yeah, well, my partner will be there. And it's like, I get it, but I think you might want someone else in addition to that.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. And I don't think it just because I'm a doula, but because I've given birth 3 times. And, you know, I didn't have a doula the first time, but having someone else there, like my relatives there, to have that person to hone in on my mm-hmm. internal, like being basically welcomed into my pregnancy zone, birthing, laboring mm-hmm. zone. It really made a difference because my partner mm-hmm. was there and he was supportive, but he was also freaking the hell out, you know, like, what's happening? So there's that. Yeah, for sure. That's great advice. If you could describe your overall pregnancy, birth, and labor experience in one word, what would that word be?
Oh, dear. I feel like I need time to like really come up with that word, since like each of those three experiences were just so different from each other.
Mm-hmm. If you want to give like an individual word for each of those experiences, you can definitely choose a word for that too.
Okay. So like pregnancy, I would say was like enjoyable. Mm-hmm. luckily. And then labor was taxing. Mm-hmm. And birth was a blur.
Yeah.
I mean, as I've already explained what happened, like, you know, I've heard of people, I've read about people who have nearly painless births, or like, mm-hmm. they don't, maybe it's not painless, but it's like, it's not excruciating. And mm-hmm. that's amazing. That was not my experience. Mm-hmm. I think that it's maybe possible, but it's definitely like one of the most painful things I've ever experienced.
Yeah.
And but because of the last minute things that had to happen in the birth, like that made it a blur.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of why I'm choosing that word.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. And it does, with the explanation behind it, it makes sense for that to be your word, because, you know, there are things that happen that probably just kind of get stored away into this place in your brain. And, you know, you had mentioned that it was like it could be categorized as a traumatic moment for, mm-hmm. you know, how quickly and everything was going on. And you know that the result was beautiful. You have CL, but it doesn't mean that your body and your mentality and your emotions didn't go through that series of like panic and concern and then like, you know, oxytocin high roller coaster of emotions.
Yeah. And I do really recommend, as another recommendation to someone who has given birth, is like to just plan to journal about it like within a few days.
Mm-hmm.
Recount your birth story in your own words in your journal, because mm-hmm. you will probably forget all the things that happened and all your emotions and feelings mm-hmm. at that time. Mm-hmm. Even if like 2 weeks go by, you will probably forget. And maybe people want to forget, and that's fine. But I kind of knew that like I wanted to like recount every detail that had happened and mm-hmm. remember that. And before this interview, I did reread it and kind of was reminded of some things that I had forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I really recommend that, because, and this is kind of funny too, is like, we declined having photos during or video during mm-hmm. the birthing process.
Mm-hmm.
We were okay with having photos right after she was born. And that was like, I think now looking back, so important for us
mm-hmm.
That you took. And then right after, we were like, oh, what if we had had a video? We would have watched that so often and would have been so amazing. But mm-hmm. at the time, you're like, I don't think I want a video of it.
Yeah.
I don't know what I would do for them, like, if I ever had a child again. But I just, like, I think, like, documenting, like, the process right after they're born we've always appreciated those photos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. And that's a good point, because, you know, in the moment, I guess a long explanation shortened is that moment is just that moment, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you're never going to birth that baby again. You're never going to go through that exact same process again. You know, you may feel really crappy, and you may feel, some people don't feel like they're beautiful and have mm-hmm. all of these things that they're worried about looking back on and being like, oh God, I don't want to be reminded of like, sure. what I looked like or things like that.
Yeah.
And I always try to advise, I never want to push or force anybody to get photos or anything like that or video, but I advise to consider it, because then they're there. And if you want to show them to people, cool. But if you don't, you don't have to.
It's just for you. Yeah.
Yeah. And so just to have that memory for yourself, but some people are really like, nah, mm-hmm. I just want my baby.
Yeah.
which is good. The last thing that I have to ask is, do you have anything that pops to mind that could be a potential resource for any listeners that are potentially struggling with infertility or, you know, something that helped you throughout your pregnancy or that you looked back on and considered, oh, that would have been good to know as you mm-hmm. went into your parenting?
Well, at this point, I don't remember a lot of the, like, infertility resources. I mean, I do remember them, but like other than like say a support group, I think was really helpful. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of along the lines of the question of like what was one thing you'd recommend to someone who's about to give birth is like birthing class, because mm-hmm. you know, if they've never given birth, like there's so many things like you don't know or realize that you learn in a birthing class and then you learn during the mm-hmm. process. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I have also had some friends not take a birthing class and I've been a little worried for them because it's such a like different experience in life. I think they're fine in the end. And many people in history have not gone through birthing classes, but hopefully, mm-hmm. you know, you do read up about it and everything because, you know, there's like just even like the noises that like birthing parents make while they're giving birth can be very jarring even for yourself. Mm-hmm. Like the noises mm-hmm. that came out of my mouth was like, whoa, where's that coming from? And I think just knowing like that you need to just accept it and it's just all part of the process. So yeah, I think of birthing class videos, like really like watching like when the baby is coming out, I think mm-hmm. super helpful.
Yeah, I think that's great. And that is a good point to think about and consider. It is such a, obviously everybody that is, you know, going through pregnancy, I would say 99.9% of people are aware of the fact that your life is going to change, you know, mm-hmm. and it's going to be an interesting and life-changing moment. And the process itself will be, most people, I would say, would look at it more as like a challenge or challenging or something that is going to be hard. Mm-hmm. And depending on the resources that you have throughout your pregnancy or within your community of friends or family, you can have a very different outcome based off of the resources you take advantage of. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. So, yeah. Thank you, Erin. Thank you so much. I really am happy that you shared your story with me. Is there any less like ending notes that you want to share?
I think that birthing is an amazing process. So I'm just like, I am really grateful that you're doing this podcast because kind of like the whole birthing class is, I think like having learning about other people's birth stories is something I did try to do a lot before I gave birth. And even if they're a different story from mine, different body type, different experience, whatever, mm-hmm. they're always helpful to hear. So I think like, yeah, getting out the word on how birth can be for different people is really important.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you for that. And I 100% agree, which is why like, you know, this podcast came about.
Yeah.
Because it could be different for so many people for so many different reasons. There's always so many different moving parts in it. So,
yeah.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Interviewing Erin for this episode was such a refresher. It was really nice to hear her birth story again, even though I was present at her birth. And I really appreciated how vulnerable she was with sharing her process of becoming pregnant. Next week, I am honored to say that you will be hearing the birth story of my niece, Nakoma. My sister, Ajane, is coming on to share her birth story from her perspective. And I love it because she talks about how just one decision that she made throughout her labor truly impacted the way that she views her labor now. So tune in next week to hear the details on that. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode today. Don't hesitate to share this with your family and friends. If you liked this episode, feel free to leave a review so my podcast can pop up for others and they can see and listen to it as well.
If you have a birth story or experience you would want to share on the Birth As We Know It podcast, head over to KionaNessenbaum.com and fill out the guest request form. That is KionaNessenbaum.com. I look forward to connecting with you again soon. Bye for now.